So hello and welcome, everyone. I'm Laura Cornell of DivineFeminineYoga.com, and I'm very happy to be here today with Leslie Howard, who teaches all about the female pelvic floor. And this is the first in our series of 10 yoga teacher success interviews. And I'm really excited about these interviews as a way for a lot of yoga teachers to get an inside look at how some teachers who are making a really big difference and doing some really exciting things with their own personal teaching, how we can understand the struggles and the successes and the challenges that we all face as yoga teachers. And so I'm really excited to have Leslie here to be sharing with us. And it's really kind of a wonderful thing that Leslie was willing to jump on the phone and be vulnerable with us and share her journey as a yoga teacher, so I'm excited about it. And I'll just tell you how I met Leslie and then a little bit about her background. I was at the International Association of Yoga Therapists conference that happened this September, and I took her workshop on the female pelvic floor, and I'll let her tell you just a little bit about her work. And I was very, very moved because I had never seen the female anatomy in such detail. And it felt very yogic and very contained and very powerful work. And I've also loved her emails and just the stance she takes about women's health and really exploring our physical anatomy, our vaginas, and understanding about what's going on down there from a physiological point of view. So Leslie has teacher training with Rodney Yee, with Tony Briggs. She has a 500-hour Yoga Alliance certification. She's been teaching for over 15 years based in New York City and the San Francisco Bay Area. And she's taught international retreats in Egypt, Hawaii, Mexico, and Italy. She is scheduled to do a lot of workshops. She's traveling right now. She's been teaching at some of the Yoga Journal conferences and at studios, not just in the Bay Area, a lot in the Bay Area, but also other places around California, Oregon, and pretty much around the United States. She's got Arizona and New York City, and I'll let her tell you a little bit more. Her website is LeslieHowardYoga.com, L-E-S-L-I-E, HowardYoga.com. And I think without any further ado, I'm just going to welcome you, Leslie. Welcome to our Yoga Teacher Success interviews.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for inviting me. I'm honored to be here.
Great. I'm really glad to have you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, what can I tell you? If you ask me, I will tell you.
Thank
so
you.
I'm hoping
great.
To inspire some other yoginis. Most definitely.
Beautiful. So let's just start with what your life looks like today as a yoga teacher, and what do you like about your teaching and what you're offering?
In the past few years with the development of my workshop on the female pelvis, I have gotten, like, endless invitations to teach all over the country. And, that's really exciting to me on so many levels because the work that I'm teaching is a really personal journey, and so it's not so much things that I learned and repackaging. It's things that I experienced directly, and kind of just this idea just kind of developed, and then I became obsessed with it, and it's I just keep improving it and adding to it. In February, I'm teaching my first 5-day training because I actually, believe it or not, I need help. I need help teaching this work. I'm the only one teaching it the way I'm teaching it, and I have so many requests. I really can't keep up. So I'm hoping to get a group of really pelvic obsessed yoginis to help me. Mm-hmm. And I just love what I do. My life is a little out of balance because I'm so, I have an activist streak in me, and, I've in the past been very politically involved, and I feel like this is bringing together two of my passions, which mm-hmm. is yoga and activism. I really, truly feel I'm doing healthcare activism
mm-hmm.
And empowering women about their health.
Yeah, and I love that, and I feel that, and I read that also in your emails, Leslie. I really get that sense of activism, joyful activism. There's two questions that I really want to ask you that relate to what you said and that I hear in some of my clients. You talked about first of all, it's related to your personal journey and healing your pelvic pain. And in the workshop that I took with you, you told us your story, and you were very vulnerable and very honest, and that was something that I loved about your workshop. And I sometimes hear from my clients that they're very cautious about telling their personal story, and they'll say to me, is it okay to tell my story? And maybe it's not appropriate in yoga, and yet for me, hearing you and taking that workshop was one of the things that I loved. So what would you say to other teachers who are a little shy about telling their own story in their offering?
I would say that they shouldn't tell their own story until they feel comfortable about it. I realize, actually, you caught my workshop kind of, you know, a couple of years in, but in the beginning, I didn't really talk about it at all because I was embarrassed. And I realized that, you know, I was kind of bringing together a place where it was a safe place. It was all women, and you know, everyone's really supportive of each other. And I now start every workshop, you know, with not too long, but maybe 10 minutes of people telling me what might be going on for them. And I'm just continuously amazed at the stories I hear, that, I mean, just the hard, tragic stories of some women's pelvises. And that really, I think it, slowly I started telling my story bit by bit. And so now I'm pretty much out there with it, and I feel comfortable with it. And I think I've gotten a lot of feedback from women that my comfort, just like you're saying now, my comfort level at being that intimate made them, it was an okay for them to be that intimate. So I would say don't force it, you know, but maybe reveal a little bit and see how it's received. You know, I think we're all a little afraid to be vulnerable, and we're kind of can sometimes be very pleasantly surprised that if you reveal yourself a little bit, it gives permission to the other person to do the same. So you know, maybe not going too far out of your comfort zone. I think that's what I would advise people that feel a little uncomfortable. But I would also say that I think it's important to tell my story, how does that benefit my class? Does that benefit my class? How does it benefit my class? You know, for my class, because it's such a personal, deeply personal space, literally, I think it very much benefits for people to hear of all the struggles I've had in healing my pelvis. So, you know, I think it's very individual.
I think that's great advice, Leslie, to start out gradually and see what you're comfortable with, and to really ask which pieces of your story benefit the students. So I really like that. I think that's great advice. The other question that relates to what you've said is that I'm guessing when you started teaching, you were teaching more similarly to how you had been taught, and then you say that now it's more self-taught and based on your own discoveries and your own learning. How did you make that transition? What was it like for you as a yoga teacher when you were just getting started? And how did you gradually transition into teaching your own content?
Well, that's a big question. You know, I started out in New York, and I just kind of did a tasting of all the yogas in New York. That was back in the 90s. And there was not a lot of yoga back then, to be honest with you. There were not a lot of choices. I went to Integral yoga. I did the teacher training there. I got very into Jiva Mukti yoga. I was very into that. And then I started teaching kind of a mix of that. And then I met Rodney Yee when he came to New York to teach. And I was kind of impressed. I was like, wow, I've never heard anybody be able to like solve so many problems, you know, physical problems. You know, people would say, when I did this, because my knee hurts. And like, he seemed like he always had the answer. And I was like, God, I want to know what he knows. And so I signed up for his training, and his training was more Iyengar-based. And then after his training, I felt very drawn to the Iyengar system in general because of their precision and their attention to detail. I think, you know, unparalleled. I mean, really. At the same time, I am a yoga teacher. You know, I do just teach yoga classes. But this other thing that I do, the teaching around the female pelvis and teaching, I see a lot of women individually for their own pelvic problems. That has been a departure from my anchor training because I feel like there is maybe, I like to say there's the red circle slash, if you know what I mean. You're like just not supposed to go into a certain area, and then there's a red circle and a slash, like no trespassing here, kind of sign. I feel like there's a red circle slash kind of over the pelvis in most yoga classes. So to depart from my Iyengar training a little bit and really, really delve deep into this subject. I read every book I could find on the subject. I've read a lot of the books many times because they're so dense. Mm-hmm. I can't take it all in. Mm-hmm. I've studied with a couple of different physical therapists that I think are really gifted, mm-hmm. that specialize in the pelvis. And then my own internal struggles and just figuring out as a very dedicated yoga practitioner what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. What makes my pelvis feel better and what mm-hmm. makes it feel worse. If the sutras talk about, you know, really your own personal experience trumps everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Ramanand Patel I consider my biggest influence and my most devout. Mm-hmm. I'm just like so devoted to him. But we have a relationship where we can talk quite a bit pretty openly about all this stuff, and we disagree on things. And he says to me, well, that's okay, because you're in a female body and I'm not.
I love that.
So he's like, that's okay that you disagree.
Mm.
So I feel like he's the most knowledgeable person yogically and around the pelvic area that I've ever encountered. I mean, he just knows things energetically and, he really experiences things on a truly deep level. So,
well, Leslie, you've given us, that's such an amazing example about how much dedicated time you've put into studying your passion. I mean, once you got, once you became obsessed, you know, just reading all those. Yeah, I mean, reading, that's what it takes to really become an expert in something and to really heal yourself and then to be able to help out and reach others. And I love it that you said that this great teacher that you respect so much, you know, you say, well, wait a minute, I disagree in this place, and you guys are able to do that with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really wonderful. And on that note, I also just want to say that, you know, sometimes I struggle with, you know, is my life too narrow? Meaning, I have really become very obsessed with this subject, not just physiologically, but culturally, historically. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in, you know, building the context around this. And I asked Ramanand on that, and he said something that I really have to hang on to. He said, if you want to be an expert at anything, you have to be obsessed. You can't be interested in multiple things and be good at them. And he said, look at Mr. Iyengar. You know, that's all he's interested in is yoga, and he's a master. So if you want to be a master of anything, he's like, you've got to be obsessed. So. You know, now I'm not saying that I'm a master, but I'm saying that, you know, that makes me feel better about, you know, how interested I am in the subject and helping women and empowering women and, you know, touching women's lives to give them knowledge that I really don't know where else it fits in our culture. Like, I'm not sure. Like, people say, why wasn't I taught this? How come nobody told me this? You know? And I say, well, you know, where would you put it? Where would you put it? Like in a health class in high school? Maybe, but I'm not sure you would have been as interested as you are now when you're 40, you know, or as interested as you are after you had your baby, or, you know, when you're when you're 15 and someone's telling you you need to take care of your pelvis, it's a very different perspective than when you're, you know, postnatal, prenatal, postmenopause, perimenopause, you know, all of these changes that happen in a woman's body. You know, we can't even imagine that when we're 15. So
I love hearing you talk about this, and I'm wondering if I can invite you just even more to tell us, because since you talk about this as an activist and you're teaching the physiology of the pelvis, I felt it, and can you articulate what is the activist piece? Like, what does it do for women to really get in touch with their pelvis? How does that change the world? How does that change the woman?
Well, I feel culturally we are fed messages from day one that the female pelvis is for having babies and for sexual pleasure. And then anything other than that, why would you need a relationship with it? And, you know, what I have found in my own body as well as working with other women is that just like we can store tension from our job, let's say, in our shoulders, I find that, you know, the pelvis is like a little storage unit. We just keep putting things in there and we never really let them out or talk about it or talk to it or listen to it. So what I mean by the activism is, number one, getting in touch with your pelvis, having a relationship with your pelvis. And what that means is knowing what's down there, looking at what's down there, touching what's down there, not in a non-sexual way. Like, can you have a relationship with it that is devoid of, it's not that it, you wouldn't use it for sex or babies, but can it be just valuable in and of itself? I mean, the pelvis is really the seat of ourselves. So, and then if you believe the yogic text, it's the seat of the Kundalini energy. So, you know, on multiple levels, there is a serious energy there that I think a lot of us are cut off from. So that's number one. Number two is knowledge is power. And, you know, I took the time to buy a medical model of a female pelvis, which you mentioned in the beginning. And, you know, when I got that, I'd been teaching the workshop probably 2 years before I got that. Boy, I just got so much feedback about how powerful that was to see their own anatomy as it is in a 3D. And you know, that they feel like they really understood it for the first time. They'd never seen anything like it. No one has ever shown them a picture of it or anything. And so, you know, you go to the gynecologist because something's wrong and, you know, basically you're not even seeing what's going on. Like, you know, you're laying on the table and maybe a man or a woman is looking inside of your most personal place and, you know, you're not even part of it. Again, there's like this divorce of below the waist. You know, like, I abdicate, like, bring a mirror with you and ask questions and say, what is that? And, you know, like, really know it. And then to also question your doctor. There's too many stories, my own experience as well as many that I've heard of, you know, unnecessary hysterectomies, you know, just too many procedures done that perhaps weren't necessary. I'm not saying that some of these things aren't necessary, but I think that it's definitely changing now, but even as recent as 20 years ago, I think women would go to the doctor, and it still happens, that, you know, you don't question their opinion. Mm-hmm. Something's wrong, and they say, oh, you know, you should have a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
And you say, oh, well, that's a bummer. Okay, but, you know, I trust you. Well, you know, I got that diagnosis, and it took me three doctors later until I found someone who said, no, you don't need a hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think 10 years ago, before I knew all this stuff, I'm not sure if I would have been as questioning.
Right.
So that's what I mean by activism. So I'm not, I hope it doesn't come across as I'm bashing doctors, because I'm not. It's really an establishment thing.
You're uplifting, you know, empowerment for women and choices.
Yeah, and it's, yeah. Really, it's up to us. Like, the American Medical Association is historically very patriarchal, And even though they're taught that this is the best, this might be the best treatment for a woman, I'm not sure if it always is. So questioning, it won't change until we really push back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the activism part. I can say one more thing about that is, mm-hmm. Another thing I bring up in my trainings, and you might say, what does that have to do with yoga? And I say everything, is I show some ads. I show some ads from women's magazines and ask women how they feel about this ad. Like, what's the message behind it?
Mm-hmm.
And, how do you feel as a woman viewing this? And there's so many ads, Laura, that show women as objects that the most offensive one I show is a Dolce & Gabbana ad that it's literally a rape scene, and it's selling bathing suits. And I say to the women, like, does this make you want to buy a bathing suit?
Mm-hmm.
The message is you'll be so sexy the men won't be able to control themselves, okay? That's the message of the ad. There's no words in the ad. But I found that ad to be extremely offensive, especially with the statistics of, one in four women in the United States have been sexually abused, okay?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, why is that so? Well, look at our culture. Look at the ads. Look at the things we're inundated with every day. So that's the other part of the activism is asking women, we're inundated with messages every day, right? I think one of the statistics of how many ads we see in a year, it's like some insurmountable number. You have to shut yourself down to it to a certain extent. Yet
mm-hmm.
studies show that it still gets in there, okay? Even though you're trying to shut it out, it still gets in there. And so, we as women have to say, this isn't okay. There's a lot of ad campaigns that I think are very degrading to women, and
mm-hmm.
I think it's up to us to write the manufacturer, call the manufacturer, voice that, like, this makes me not want to buy your products. I'm not really sure what you're doing here. I think that's important.
Yeah, that's great. Before we end, Leslie, there's one more question that I really want to get to. And it has to do with kind of your process of expanding and growing as a teacher. And
mm-hmm.
if you want to just kind of touch on some of the things that might have been difficult along the way or some of the things that you think have really contributed to your success in getting your message out there and now, as you said, being asked to go everywhere that you need to train other teachers because you can't meet all the requests. And I know you talked in our at the workshop that I took, you talked about investing in yourself, and you went out and you bought that medical model. I'm guessing it wasn't
mm-hmm.
inexpensive. It was a real investment. What were the decision points along the way in your growth that you think really helped you do this?
Well, I have to say that I consciously chose to not have children, and so I think when you have kids, that your decisions need to be more oriented towards them. So in that particular way, I'm lucky that I don't have to think about that. So if I have an extra couple hundred dollars,
mm-hmm.
I might say to myself, this 3D model I think would really improve my students' experience of this workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth it to me. It's worth mm-hmm. it to me because I feel so strong about my message. I realize that not everybody can do that. Yes, you're right. That medical model was very expensive, and like not everybody can go plunk a couple hundred dollars down for something like that. So then you're using 2D pictures, which is what I did when I started. I had handouts and drawings and things like that, which is effective. I just keep trying to raise the bar. So I'm in a position where I can do that and want to do that. So I think it's got to be an individual decision, and a family decision too. If you have a family, how do you balance that? How do you balance your work life with your family life and make it good for everybody? So I'm not sure if I really answered your question.
I think it's fascinating to say that because you had made the decision not to have children, that has freed you up, in a sense, is what I'm hearing, to really empower your work.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be able to travel the amount that I'm traveling. You know, I wouldn't be able to spend the money I spend on. I keep upgrading my everything, and you know, all the things I use, props. You know, making my website better. You know, I really want to just make it a better experience for people. That's really where it's coming from. Is how can I strengthen the student's experience, because there's been a handful of teachers in my life that I look at and go, they are so apart from the others. Like, what is it about them? Like the person that's popping into my mind, Judith Lassiter. I mean, she's just amazing. You know, she makes the information so accessible. And, you know, she always brings her pelvis with her, or her spine with her, or her shoulder blade with her. I mean, she's great. I love it. And so, you know, what I would say to other teachers is to really think about the yoga teachers that have inspired you, and can you figure out what it is about them? What is it about their teaching that really resonates with you? And then to try to cultivate that in yourself, because that's what I do. I think about, okay, the people that have inspired me, like, it's not just like, you know, Patricia Walden's another wonderful teacher I study with as much as I can. You know, what is it about her that's so amazing? And it's just her, she is a true yogini on every level. I mean, she is a true seeker of the truth, capital T. And it just, it emanates out of her. I mean, just like on a spiritual, energetic level. And I say to myself, okay, she's someone who's like practicing seriously every day. How can I do that? How can I make my practice more priority and make it genuine? You know, make it as genuine as possible. So that's what I would say.
That's beautiful, Leslie. That's really beautiful. Oh, so I'm going to take a deep breath. Thank you so much. It's been great to have your presence here.
Thank you.
Yeah, I enjoyed hearing your passion and your truth. And so anybody, again, I'm going to give you Leslie's website in case you want to check it out, lesliehowardyoga.com, L-E-S-L-I-E, howardyoga.com. Oh, Leslie, thank you so much. Is there anything you want to say before we say goodbye?
I just want to thank you, and I just want to tell you that your Divine Feminine Telesummit, I loved it. I just thought it was so wonderful, and I didn't listen to any of them live because I couldn't, but I loved that I could, just get the podcast of them, and I listened to them all, and, you know, you just had an amazing group of women, and I just love what you're doing, because I think anything that's empowering women is just a great thing. So keep doing what you're doing is what I want to say. You're an inspiration. You're an inspiration. Truly.
Then it goes both ways. And thank you so much. I'm glad you got to listen to them, even if it was later. I know that a lot of women, that's exactly what happened. So you're not alone in that.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Leslie. A big namaste to you.
And to you. Okay, Laura. Take care.
So many blessings. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.